Thursday the 11th of March, Kof Hei Adar, Rabbi Dr. David Fox, The Mind of the Matter, Exploring Psychological Factors in Halachic Problems.
Good morning and thank you for asking me back again to Torah Way. This is one of the highlights of my visits to England. I've been asked to speak on the topic mental health and psychological factors and how they will at times have an impact on halacha. Let me be makdim, let me preface by mentioning that there has been a hostility and a great resistance for many, many decades in halachic circles to the profession of psychology, and with good cause. As time has developed and as we have managed to scientificize more and more of our premises and our yesodos in working to understand people, there has over time been a rapprochement. There's been a gradual acceptance that Chachma Bagoyim Tamin, that there's information which we who are involved in Psak Halacha, or involved in being Mechanech people, or involved in Sarchei Tzibur, this information which we can utilize, which draws on the acquired knowledge we've developed in trying to understand the science of the individual. The main part of my parnasa in Los Angeles is doing forensic consulting and clinical psychology, and I certainly have an active practice. Around 50 or 60% of my patients are religious Jewish people, and I also do a lot of additional consultation in the area of criminal psychology and other aspects of forensic work. I've been a professor both in medical schools and in graduate schools for 30 years, and as a result, I have some information which I can share with you today, which will hopefully hold your interest as God-fearing and halachically observant Jewish people. The area that we work in as scientific psychologists pertains to having a better understanding of the mind and the mind's relationship with the brain and the relationship of both the brain and the mind with the rest of the body. And over the last many years, we've also been very interested in the religious experience, in understanding more about the kochos and nefesh, and some of the yearnings and the stirrings deeper inside of a person which prompt them to develop a higher consciousness of the sacred, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol. Certainly not all of the work that we do that's relevant to Psak Halacha that will draw on psychological knowledge is theological in basis. But let's take a look at some of the things that we might turn to a religious psychologist who has scientific training, and not all of them do, but those who do actually have formal training, what might we be calling on a Torah observant clinician to provide consultation in halacha? I frequently serve as a dayan in a wide variety of Dinei Torah, not only in America, but in Yerushalayim. And I'll cite some examples of cases where I've been called in by the poskim to offer an assessment or an opinion. So let's take a look at a couple of things. Let's take a look at first at mental competence. We know that Chazal, in many, many places, they speak about the status of a shote, of a person who is not well, mentally well. Now, there are certain sugyas and shas, there are certain areas where the term shota refers to someone who's mentally retarded, meaning they lack intellectual competence. There are other areas in halacha where a shota is referring to a person who is psychotic, which means they may be very brilliant and very right, But their judgment is poor because either they have delusions, which means they distort reality, their understanding of fact and situations is deviant, or they may even hallucinate, which means that their take on reality, their experience of what's going on in the moment to moment, is not real at all. They're either preoccupied by thoughts of aliens, or they have persecutory thinking. They think that someone is seeking to hurt them. So there is an ambiguity in Chazal with regard to who is a shota, and there are many situations where a skilled, scientifically trained psychologist will be called in rendering some appraisal of a person in a variety of areas in halacha. For example, can a kashrus organization that does hashgacha, can they hire as a mashgiach a person who's psychotic? I deal with this very, very frequently. Many of the big kashrus organizations will hire a person. I don't know about in Great Britain, but in America, the job of mashgiach, not the rav hamachshir, but the mashgiach is not always one that is a lucrative position. And many times people who can't find other work will be hired to observe something in a food manufacturing plant. And can you hire a person who's a schizophrenic? A person who has delusions, a person who may hear voices, a person who possibly is particularly regressed and disturbed, may see things which are not actually happening. So this is the situation where a clinician like myself might be called in to assess a person or to help the Rav HaMachshir, the Kashrus organization, determine, is this person the Shota who Chazal we're talking about? Or is this a person who, because he or she is in treatment or because they're on medication, do we say that this would factor into the Itim Chalim, Itim Shota? This would be a person who, because at the time they're medicated or in appropriate treatment, they would be considered less of a Shota. So this is an example of an area where psychological science could be helpful. Another example I run into very often is, let's say, in the case of Gittin. Many times we have situations where a couple is separating, they're heading for divorce, and there's an allegation that one of them is a shote, which means at the time of the wedding they were mentally intact, and the kedushin was hal, was an effective marriage, but something has happened to one of them. They've either had brain damage, or they've had experimentation with illicit drugs, or other things have happened to them. They've had traumatic experiences, and so their mental functioning is now defective. So if it's a woman, she may not be competent to receive a get. If it's a man, he may not be competent to offer a get. And so this is a situation where not infrequently I'm called in to do an assessment by a basement. I had a situation not long ago where a husband was actually living in a residential facility for psychotic adults, religious man, and all of the residents, all of the patients are religious people, yeshivish backgrounds, very Haredi facility. But it's a place that takes in only people who are severely mentally ill and who are schizophrenic. The wife, very understandably, wanted to get, because her husband is chronically mentally ill. He'll never recover from the problems that he has. He's under heavy medication. He's not safe. He's not stable. And, of course, if he's a shote, if he is, in fact, mentally incompetent, he cannot give his wife a get. And she'll remain a guna, which means she'll never be able to remarry. Now, by strict halachic definition, this person is not rational, and therefore the rabbanim were all ready to say that he was a shota, and this woman's life and her fate, she's really doomed to a life of solitude and misery. And yet, I'm sorry? Hetamei rabbanim will apply sometimes in reverse, which means if the woman's mental competence is suspect, so then there are situations where the postum will set aside the cherem to remain a gershon, which would prevent a man from giving a get bal karcha to his wife. In a situation where she's a shota, she can't accept a get, and so he's stuck, and he can't marry another woman. Sometimes in Hetamei Rabbanim will permit the man to marry somebody else, and we'll be mazaka her with a get. However, that will only be if the woman is incompetent. If the man's incompetent, the way the halacha works, it's that the husband, by Torah law, needs to be sane. So this is a horrible situation for a woman. I evaluated this young man at the behest of a very chashuva beis din, and it was my honor to be called in. And what I determined was that the husband was in fact schizophrenic, which means he's severely mentally ill, but he understood what a get was, and he understood what divorce was. But the particular focus of his shtus, I don't mean that in a derogatory term, in a halachic term, the particular focus of his mental illness was that he believed his wife was dead. So he said she doesn't need a get because she's dead. And when I was able to explain to the other dayanim that the reason that he's saying she's dead, is because he can't accept emotionally the fact that he has ruined his marriage because of his inability to function normally. So the way he has dealt with this, he has come up with this formula in his mind that would explain the reason that he can't live with her is not because he has faults himself, but rather it's because she's dead. And I worked through halachically that really there's probably not a difficulty if a man believes that his wife is dead, but he accepts that she wants a get, or that her dead neshama wants a get, that would not be an ikuv in halacha for him to be able to give a get. In other words, there's not generally a problem of a husband giving a get, even though he believes the get is not necessary. He can still award a woman a get if she wants the get. In a situation like this, we were able to help him understand that even though you believe your wife is dead, but she's still requesting the get, and for her sake, would you be willing to give your dead wife a get? And he was masking to this, and Baruch Hashem, she's no longer an aguna. That's a very bizarre situation. That's an illustration of how even though Chazal give gedorim for a shoteh, but we may sometimes be able to determine that a person who is, by scientific definition, mentally ill may not necessarily meet the halachic criteria for shoteh, and therefore we will have some way to help them out halachically. But let me give you another example, because I know when Dadi spoke with me by email and asked me if I would talk on this topic, he said that the Chashuva Balabatim who attend this year wanted some clinical examples. Would you like some more examples? So let me give you another. This is a... Well, I awarded the title. Remember, I'm qualified to diagnose, so I do. So I know the difference. Give you another example. Can I speak up? Yes, that's one of the things I tell people, that I used to be a mime. And I got arrested, but they told me I had a right to remain silent. Sorry, it's just a joke. Let me give you another example of where halacha would interface with mental health. Now, this is a very fascinating case where, fortunately, it didn't come to me other than consultatively. Horrible situation. A woman was mezana, a religious woman was mezana. And she, at the time, was seeing a psychotherapist who had diagnosed her with multiple personality. Now, multiple personality is a very, very elusive diagnosis, and we're very reluctant to give that. It's sort of a Hollywood image of someone who has many, many personalities. But we do have something called dissociative identity disorder, where we actually will see people who, generally because they've been through very, very horrible trauma, can actually switch out of one mode of conduct, and they can actually function as if they're someone else. And I'll speak about some ramifications of this. But the psychotherapist, who was a Ben Torah from person, he contended that at the time that she was mezana with this person, who was also a very frum man, that she was switched into one of her alter egos, which means that the woman who was involved in this horrible miyasa liaison was not the woman who was married to the husband. And therefore, he wanted to contend to the beis din that she does not have all the din of moredus, that she's allowed to stay together with her husband if the husband wishes to remain with her. And even though she was a mezana baratzon, even though she knew what she was doing, but only a part of her knew what she was doing. And this was actually actually not her herself who was being Mazana. Now, I disagreed with the Hachlata, and although this particular case was brought to many of the Gedolei Poskim in Eretz Yisrael, and I was asked my opinion, I said that I could not buy it, and I did not think, based on Tshuvas and Achronim, that we would say that a person, even if we say that they are in a different matzav ruach at the time they're doing the avera, we would not say that they are not the person themselves. There's a fascinating tshuva in Binyan Sion about a woman who, under a certain hechitimsa, she thought she was allowed to be doing this adulterous activity. The Binyan Sion was matir based on her state of mind at the time, but in terms of saying that a person who knows Baratzon what she's doing, but it's only a chelik of a personality, I felt that was far-fetched. But mitzad idach, when we take that concept of a multiple personality, this is something that I actually spoke over with Rav David Soloveitchik from Brisk, as well as Rav Moshe Sternbuch Shlita. You may remember there was a very strange case a few years ago. It's happened a few times since. But there was an allegation of a dibbuk coming to somebody in Yerushalayim. It was a woman, and she was speaking with a deeper voice, and they were contending that she was really a dibbuk of some other person, maybe of a dead man. And this presented a lot of controversy. The Mukubalim were called in, and the Poskim were called in. It probably reached some Pearsome here in the United Kingdom also. It's certainly famous in the United States, and it generated a lot of gossip and talk. My humble assessment was that she did not qualify as a dibbuk, because most dibbuks that we come across in rabbinic literature are not such amaratzim. And this one turned out to be a fraud, and the case Baruch Hashem was exposed. But I did mention to Rav Sternbuch that we actually will see, in cases of multiple personality, and I have seen this, we will see people, for example, a woman, and when she goes into her male alter ego, she will actually grow facial hair. So we'll actually see that there is a bizarre interface between the mind, the brain, and the body, so that a female, during those weeks when she is functioning and talking like a man and believes her identity as a man, she actually will grow facial hair like a man and need to shave regularly. Shave al tase. But you actually do have situations which perhaps at times we will call them a dibbuk, but this is an example of a very, very unusual and severe mental disorder. But sometimes the compelling evidence we have that this person must be possessed by another spirit, of another soul, we can actually sometimes verify scientifically that something is actually happening to a female, or to a male. They're having hormonal changes, and it may not be because they are demonically possessed or possessed by a spirit, but it is a form of mental disorder. Let me segue from that into another example where halacha will sometimes turn to a scientifically trained mental health professional. One of the reasons there has been an aversion to psychology for the last century is because not only do we take an interest in individual behavior, but sometimes in the realm of sexuality and intimacy, there has been a lot of flagrant violation of ethic coming out of the pseudoscience of psychology. We're a little bit more mature, and we have a better understanding of these things now. But here's another example. Within the case of sexuality, I'm called very, very frequently by Rabbanim with regard to the scourge that we're dealing with currently with regard to lesbianism and homosexuality. I don't want to talk about that today, but I do want to talk about people who seek a gender realignment. And we run into this. There's actually a Shilas and Tshuvas Sefer that came out a few years ago, which is devoted entirely to these Shilas that come before Batei Din, where a man or a woman wants to go through a surgery and wants to alter their gender. And we actually had a case like this in one of the Batei Din Yerushalayim. I was sitting as a dayan that day. And a couple came in for a get, and the reason that they wanted a get immediately was because the husband had decided he was going to travel to Thailand and have surgery to become a female. And the shaila would be that once he had the surgery and he was now physiologically and anatomically, just anatomically, not physiologically, anatomically meaning the structure of his body was going to be altered, was he in fact now going to be called a woman, and would he not be able to give his wife a get? There is a shittim halacha like that. If a person goes through that type of change, that they are no longer halachically regarded as a male. Even that there's one Sephardic posik from a couple of centuries ago who said that if such a man is married and then he goes through the surgery and then he dies, his wife does not need yibum. Because he, at the time he made this alteration in his body, he lost his gender status, al pi din, which is very fascinating. But here is a situation where we have to figure out, is anything going to change in this person halakhically because he's gone through this procedure? And secondly, the fact that a person wants to go through that procedure, would that render him, with a halakhic definition, a shota? Meaning if a person is actually willing to go and have chovel ba'atzmo or have another person alter him surgically, would we say that that would regard him as, we would have to regard him as mentally ill? Fascinating case, and I won't go through all of the details of that, but just to give you an idea of where a scientifically trained clinician might be called in to provide consultation.
Did he have to give a get beforehand?
But he did have to give her a get, yes. So
is he shaita or not?
I'm sorry?
Is he shaita or not?
Well, he was able to give a get before he had the surgery. The fascinating thing was, when I was in Yerushalayim 2 months ago, one of the dayanim from this case came over to me, and he said he had a horrible situation, that this man, who's now a woman, came in to get a tudas nisuin because he wants to marry a different man. And how was the beis din to proceed with that? Because in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, they do have to have the divorces and the marriages with the haskama of the religious rabbis. And I won't give you the end of that story. Maybe you'll invite me next time and I'll talk about that. Let me give you a couple other examples of things that would fascinate us. You know, for the longest time, we made the assumption that alcoholism and drug abuse did not really factor into Jewish life, that this was not statistically significant. The old joke was that the reason that Jews don't like to get drunk is because it interferes with their guilt and their suffering. If they're too sleepy, they can't feel suffer or feel guilty or anything. But we know that is not the case. There's a whole ASIC in science, and this does impinge in a halachic understanding of things. Are people who have various addictions, are they considered chole haguf, or are they considered chole nefesh? In other words, would we say that a person who has one or another addiction, would we say that they have to be regarded halachically as a chola with regard to the Shabbos, with regard to the Kuros Nefesh, and different things? And in America, I don't know if this is the case here in England, but in America, this has become a very, very abused topic, this idea that anyone who has an addiction should be regarded as sick. People look for many, many heterim, because they say that they do one or another thing. They have a gambling addiction, therefore they're a chola, and therefore they can be mechala Shabbos to gamble. They have all sorts of things which are halachically nonsense. But I had a fascinating case many, many years ago. A person who was a criminal, a religious man who was a criminal, and he was a thief in very simple terms, and he was in a lot of trouble legally and halachically. And he came to see me, and he had had an epiphany. He realized that he's not a gadav, but he has an illness. And what is his illness? His illness is that he likes to take other people's money. And therefore, he had to have the rahmanas of the beis din, of the court, and when I write him a letter, that he can't help himself because he's addicted to doing dishonest things. And this actually, in one case, was used successfully in the supreme in the higher court in the United States. A criminal, a white-collar criminal, as we call them. I don't want to embarrass us. Most of us wear white collars here. But a white-collar criminal actually pleaded that he was a psychopath, and psychopathic people are sick, and therefore he could not be sentenced because he was a sick man. And he actually succeeded successfully, and he got his sentence reduced because the judge had rahmanas on him. And here we have a religious man who is taking money from people, and he's decided that he's sick, and he's joined an organization that is for people like himself who have the illness of being dishonest. And I didn't believe it, and I didn't accept it, and I didn't go along either halakhically or scientifically with his formula, his formulation that he had a sickness. And sure enough, about 6 weeks after he was megalovis to me, he came in and he had a diabolical look in his eye. And I said, what is going on? So he said, I just got myself appointed treasurer of the National Organization of Sick Thieves. and sure enough, a month later, he absconded with all of their funds, and he went to Europe never to be seen again. So he succeeded. Never. So again, that's an area that needs to be looked at very carefully. There certainly are addictive behaviors where we might regard a person as mentally ill, but not every behavioral addiction to gambling or to other things should be regarded as a sickness. Let me give you one or two other cases. I think we have to close at 9 o'clock. Okay, so let me give you one or two other situations. Firstly, let me stop. Are there any questions that I might ask? I don't want to leave you...
Is kleptomania not a problem?
Is it?
Kleptomania.
Well, you know, the term mania, we used to use the term manic depressive illness. We changed it, we call it bipolar illness now. But mania used to refer to a situation where a person is out of control. We've come to apply that term to a person who does not control a specific behavior. So we'll refer to a person as having kleptomania, which means that he is not out of control, but there's a particular thing that he's doing compulsively. No, we don't really regard that halachically as a chole. We don't regard that as a sickness. It's something that can respond to treatment. It doesn't necessarily require medication. But I think... rather than focusing on kleptomania, let me look at something which it's loosely associated with, which comes up in halacha many, many times. Let's take a look at obsessive-compulsive disorder. Now, there you have a situation where we might be more likely to say a person who really suffers from OCD does have an illness not in the sense that they're mentally ill, but we have found that a lot of the drive in obsessive-compulsive disorder is mediated in the brain. It's neurologically generated, which means that they're responding to medication because the brain may be producing too much of a certain select chemical, which is driving them to have recurrent thoughts. The Gemara Psachim speaks about anini hadas, people who just have hypersensitive reaction to things. Chayehim einum chayim, that's what the Gemara says. When three types of people, Chazal say that their life is unlivable because they can't control themselves. So take a look at a situation, a person has severe OCD, and it does show up genetically in Jews with some frequency. And again, it's not necessarily something we'll call a mental illness, but it's something that does have a neurological basis. And people literally are locked into compulsions, and they can't control them. I had a situation, a husband wanted to divorce his wife. He loved her dearly, and she was a good woman. But she had such severe obsessive-compulsive disorder that it would take her 40 minutes, 45 minutes to walk from one end of her house to the other, because every time she came to a doorway, she would have to step in and out of the doorway 17 times. So literally, she could not stop this behavior. She was not a shota. She was not mentally ill. Bright woman, educated woman. But she came up with severe compulsive behavior. She could not stop it. You have situations like this. Many times we'll have a person who is coming up for a shidduch. And if the chassan or the kala has OCD, there are poskims who say that they have an obligation to reveal this to the person they're marrying. If they don't reveal it, we have poskim in certain communities will say that it's a mekaptos. Because chayeyem einem chayim, it can become misery for them and very, very difficult for their partner to live with. So I'm not speaking specifically about kleptomania, but there are behaviors where people cannot control them. The Gemara says in Psachim, early in Psachim, that there were certain groups of people you could not sell a Korban Pesach to. You could not have a Korban Pesach with a Chabura, people who had a certain predilection for Chumrah, because they would end up invariably finding something wrong with the Korban when nothing was really wrong with it, and they would puzzle the Korban, and it'd be a wasted action. The Gemara in Nazir, Samach Gimel, the Gemara says that Ein Lecha Choli Godol Mizu, that you don't have any sickness that's greater than this, a person who is so indecisive that they're constantly thinking they have to go Lechumra on things. So indirectly addressed your question. We have a few minutes. Any other practical questions I might ask you?
What about the lesbian and homosexuality? Is it the illness? Can you blame that person?
Can we change?
Uh-oh.
Can we blame them? Meaning, is it their fault?
Yeah.
Well, can they
control it?
Fault and so on. There's an old joke in America. There's a Jewish law firm, Mrs. Goldberg and Son. She makes you feel guilty, and he defends you. we don't always get into the idea of who's at fault or who's to blame. I've actually written a chapter on this topic for Rabbanim, but. Certainly better than 85% of men or women who struggle with this are doing so by choice. And if they sincerely seek help to cope and to be able to work within a heterosexual relationship, they can be helped. That there is a miat, there are a minority of people who struggle with this who may not seek help or may be resistant to help. But certainly the large majority we have found who sincerely want to work on more adaptive living within halachic framework can be helped in that. Any other questions? I don't want to keep you. I know you have busy things to do. Any other specific questions I might be able to address before we close? Okay, was this helpful? Because I was reluctant to talk about it, but... Okay, see. Thank you.